Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
The Killer Bees!
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Drift Bar in the Heights. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how are we doing?
He's Blank. I am Branham. Brian on site to Drift Bar H back at the Palacious Gal Media Building. We are the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5, a Friday edition of the Killer Bees. Blankers at Drift Bar. I'm in Arizona, but the vibes at Drift Bar, way better. It's your spot to be. I mean, get off work, go to Drift Bar, hang out, have a good time. They'll have UFC 309 tomorrow. College football all day tomorrow. College basketball. Love me some college basketball. And Drift Bar is the place to be to watch your college basketball. It's the best patio in the Heights. The weather, beautiful. You've been dying to get outside all summer long. Well, now's your chance. And if you're going to do it in the best patio in the Heights at Drift Bar. Book your Christmas parties, your company parties, all of that. Drift Bar, where the Southern Coast meets a true Texas ice house. It's awesome. All right, Blankers, how's it going on this Friday in Houston? Things good? Things okay?
Everything's good. Traffic was a little dicey, but no problems here. Pauly called it the inarguably the best day in the city of Houston this year. He may be right. It is phenomenal outside. It is the perfect temp. It's about 74 degrees, sunshine, clear skies. It is beautiful here at Drift Bar.
Yeah, I left this morning, of course, and it was dare I say a little chilly. Dare I say it was a little chilly early this morning before the sun rose? Is it fair to say that?
Fair. Walking the dogs, yes. I caught that breeze you're talking about. Yep.
Yeah. All right. So Thursday night football yesterday. And we're going to talk about Bobby Slowick. Bobby Slowick. He got liquored up and ran his mouth again. We'll talk about Bobby Slowick and what he had to say today. I also have a theory on this coach speak stuff. People like to have all these takes. Alex Bregman, what is plan B if the Astros do miss out on Alex Bregman? And today's a big day, Blinkers. Yes, it's Friday. Yes, Houston plays Arizona. Yes, you're at Drift Bar. All of you should be. But year two of the NIT begins tonight for the Houston Rockets. So, of course, we got to talk about that later on as well. But Thursday Night Football, Eagles coming from behind, getting the victory over the Commanders of Washington. What was the biggest takeaway you had of that?
First of all, it was a horrible first half. At times, it was a tough game to watch. But the funny thing to me was, aside from just saying how good Saquon Barkley has been for the Eagles and how, no matter what people thought about, you know, was he worth all the money and the questions that even we were talking about, you know, his biggest problem was, could he stay healthy? He has been phenomenal for the Eagles all season long and dominant, and he was again last night. And I think that is huge for an Eagles team that has been up and down. And there's the funny thing, Jeremy, is there's similarities between the Eagles and the Texans in the fact that they're also having a tale of two halves, only no one's talking about it because they're winning games and their struggles are in the first half. They get off to slow starts, and then they just have dominant second halves. And they're like, well, should that be a concern? It's not that big of a deal unless we get to the playoffs and then you get off to a slow start. Whereas if it's the opposite, like the Texans, people are going, what the hell is going on every single, you know, second half?
Yeah, the my biggest takeaway from this game, really, like looking at this from an NFL perspective, a Houston Texan perspective a little bit, not really the individual team perspective, although if I'm a Philadelphia fan, I feel good from both of these teams' standpoints if I'm a fan of their teams. Like, I feel good where the Eagles are. Like, 8-2, your offense has a lot of pieces. They're starting to play a lot better. The defense is good. Now, you are coached by a jabroni. Like, that's my biggest hesitation there. But, you know, jabronis like jabronis. Maybe Sirianni's kind of liked and adored a little bit in Philadelphia. And, you know, if I'm a Commander fan, I love where my organization's at, right? Like, you were an embarrassment these last few years in the ownership of Snyder. You bring in Dan Quinn. You draft draft Jaden Daniels, and it's like, oh, we've all of a sudden been able to find significance in the NFL. It really is the Texans' story. The Texans hit rock bottom. They find DeMeco, C.J. Stroud. They're relevant again in the NFL. It's the same thing with the Commanders. They've been a joke of a franchise for quite some time now. You bring in a stable head coach with really good leadership, and you hit on quarterback. You are now significant in the NFL and relevant in the NFL. So I would be pleased from both the perspectives of both fan bases with where those two teams are. Now, from like a bigger picture view, I think the NFC is deeper than the AFC. And this sounds like blasphemous, right, from where we were at the beginning of the season. But we were talking about the standings a little bit on Tuesday when you brought up the cash 'em or trash 'em, where the Packers are. And there's not a whole lot of wiggle room there because the NFC is deep. I think the NFC, and I'm going on record, I don't think, the NFC is deeper than the AFC, and it's the first time it's happened in a few years.
It really has. It's like the Western Conference in basketball for years and years and years was kind of that kind of top-to-bottom, steady, solid, dare I say, dominance in a lot of ways. And when you look at it, it's also basically attributed to the fact that you had teams that we thought were going to be better than they were in the AFC this year, like Cincinnati, who's fighting for their lives, like the Dolphins and the Jets, depending on how you felt about either one of those two teams. There's teams that fell off that you were like kind of expecting they were going to be better, even a Cleveland at the start of the season, and they're not. And then you look at, you mentioned Washington and the fact that I don't think anybody at the start of the year thought, well, Washington's going to be in the mix for a playoff spot. Yeah, there were people talking about Chicago, but, Brian raised his hand that he thought Washington was going to be a playoff team. But other than BMAC,
really?
Not
at
many
what point?
People
Before
thought.
Before the year?
I guess so.
Yeah, I guess you guys have. I guess. I could turn myself down a little bit. I don't know what's going on with your end there, but no, I don't know if you guys. I guess the answer is no. You don't remember, but I had a cash to trash it that Washington was going to be the Texans of this year.
Okay, did you think they'd make the playoffs? Because I mean, you could look at that from two point of views, right? Like they are the Texans sense that they return to relevancy versus they are going to be a playoff team like the Houston Texans. So you can kind of go both ways on that, depending on the perspective.
Sure, and I wouldn't have said it, and I didn't say it at the time, that it was 100% lock, but yeah, I thought they were going to be a 9-10 win team and be right there in the playoff conversation.
Yeah, the NFC's loaded, man. Like, it really is.
They are, and that's what's saying that, Dallas fell off. We didn't think Minnesota was going to be as good as they are, and they've been
definitely
really,
not.
Really good. So Dallas was a team that I think, much like the three or four teams I rattled off in the AFC, Dallas was that one team where we're like, maybe not, maybe so, we'll see, but they're probably a playoff team. They look anything but that. But other than that, there's been a lot of overachievement on the NFC side and a lot of underachievement on the AFC side.
If you look at the three wild cards in the NFC, it's Minnesota, who's 7-2, by the way, Green Bay, and then the final wild card are the Commanders. The first team out of the playoffs currently, San Francisco. So, like, the bottom of the NFC, you're looking at Minnesota, Green Bay, Washington, San Francisco currently out. You look at the AFC and their wild cards. Now, Baltimore, obviously, very, very good. They're the first wild card. But then you go Chargers, second wild card, Denver, third and final wild card, and then you have the Colts, the Bengals, and then the Dolphins after that. So the NFC's got some depth to it that it hasn't had in years. That was the takeaway that I had watching that one. I also, looking at this from a very nuanced New York Giant way, I think Saquon Barkley is going to get Joe Shane and Brian Daboll fired. Obviously, their record and their performance this year is a huge variable in that as well. But I think that Shane and Daboll could have gotten by and could have gotten another year if Saquon Barkley left them and was not good. But the fact that Saquon Barkley left them, went to a rival, has been one of the top three running backs in the NFL this year, and then you couple that with their performance up there in New York, I think that Saquon Barkley is going to have a huge determining factor in getting those two guys fired out of the Giants.
I think, and again, maybe this is where Hard Knocks can get you too, depending on how you look at it and who was in favor and who was against Saquon. The biggest thing to me is that I think Daboll will be the one guy that could survive that. I think Daboll can survive it because of the fact that he got dealt the hand of Daniel Jones from the time he's been there. He's done the best he could, but Daniel Jones has been way lesser than. If he was involved a lot or heavily or said that he didn't want Saquon, that would be a different story. But other than that, I think that, you're right. There could be some serious heads rolling in New York because of the fact that he's stayed healthy. He's the same player he was that everybody thought he was going to be when he came out of Penn State. And when he's healthy, he's so damn athletic and so talented, both catching and running the football, that he's dominant.
Yeah, because, I mean, cleaning house though. I like cleaning house. Like, if you're gonna get rid of the general manager, you might as well get rid of the head coach too, and come together with like this unified front. I will agree with you that Daboll has a much better chance than Shane. I think Shane's done. Whereas Daboll, yeah, I think, can still fight and keep the job. I'm with you on that. Just generally speaking, if you're close to pulling the trigger on both of them, you might as well just pull the trigger on both of them, start anew.
Well, remember the conversation we had even here in the fact that we were wondering about Caserio simply because normally you want the synergy between coach and GM of guys that have known each other, guys that have worked together. You know, and if you're a GM, you want to be able, just like we say with the coaches and the GMs that want to pick the groceries if they're serving dinner, if you want to be the GM that's in total control, then you want to have a coach that you picked. And that's a difficult scenario if Daboll survives. But I think Dable's a good enough offensive mind, and I think he deserves a chance with someone other than Daniel Jones.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. And then the final takeaway that I had, Cliff Kingsbury. Like the Cliff Kingsbury angle of it. And I don't want to be, like, I'm in a good mood. It's a Friday, right? It's Friday. I'm in Arizona, you know, doing what people in Arizona do, which I'm not really quite sure what that is. But looking at the Cliff Kingsbury offense, like, it's a lot of fun, and I know they didn't have this tremendous night of offense yesterday, but they have had a good body of work in 2024, and we've had the, yeah, I wish it was Cliff Kingsbury, not Bobby Slowick. I actually have a positive spin out of this, though. If it wasn't Bobby Slowick, we think it would have been Cliff Kingsbury, right? That gives me some belief that when D'Amico Ryans does have to go hire another offensive coordinator, which who knows when that will be, maybe it'll be as soon as this offseason. Because Cliff Kingsbury was the runner-up, I feel like D'Amico Ryans is going to be good at hiring offensive coordinators.
I hope so. I hope he's better than Nick Caserio is at drafting offensive linemen. And if that's that's a good situation, that's a winner. I think that, you know, D'Amico coming from as a defensive-minded coach, coming from an offensive system probably helps too, because he had contact with a lot of guys that were on an offensive side, familiar with Shanahan's offense, like Bobby Slowick, like other guys. That might be able to open some doors too. But yeah, I mean, I think Cliff, no matter what you say about him, you know, yay or nay as a head coach, he's a good offensive mind, and he does a lot of really good things for quarterbacks, as we've seen in college when he worked with Caleb Williams, and now doing what he's doing with Jaden Daniels. So he's going to be a hot name, and he'll probably be in the game for quite a while to see that. I think D'Amico won't have any problem because you got the calling card of working with C.J. Stroud and good skill position players that most offensive coordinators would go, I'll sign up for that job. That would be fun to be around those guys.
Yeah, but you got to be able to identify who'd be good at it. Like, it's easy to be like, sure, you know, everybody's going to want it. You want the job because they have a good young quarterback, but so will bad offensive coordinators. Like, bad offensive coordinators are going to want the job just much as good offensive coordinators. So it's about being able to identify and have an eye for good play calling.
And you want to decipher from it.
Because Cliff was second, I think D'Amico could have a pretty good idea of, like, hey, this is a guy who's going to be a good offensive play caller. The counterpoint, I guess, would be, well, he brought in Bobby Slowick.
Yeah, and he looked like heroic for doing it in year one. And so here we are. But at the same time, when you look at it, I think it'll be pretty easy for him to decipher guys that know that Shanahan West Coast type offense, guys that know and have command of modern day NFL football, and stay away from the old school guys that have been retreads and recycled and just don't fit and understand the way the game's called today, i.e. even a Mike McCarthy, who, you know, when he had Rodgers, everything was simplistic and easy. But, you know, he's calling a style of play that just doesn't work right now in the NFL. And there's multiple other cases like that in the league where I'm sure, you know, D'Amico will be able to decipher that and find a younger guy that's more hip and tuned with, you know, the idiosyncrasies of that kind of offense and how it would best suit the skill position players here.
TV guy Jonah will be joining us at 3:30. Talk about the Dallas Cowboys. What is your plan B if the Astros cannot get Alex Bregman? I've also identified who I want as my left-handed bat in the outfield. Who said it at 4:30? BZ Money. We give you winners. That's what we do with the Killer Bees. We give you winners. We'll be giving you some winners with BZ Money a little bit later on. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. We're on the Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975, on the YouTube at ESPN Houston. We're on Twitter at ESPN975, Blankers at Pac-Man Joel, Brian at Sacked by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. Bobby Slowik talked today, and he ticked a lot of people off. I have a theory on coaches who talk to the media. Also, we'll also listen to what some Bobby had to say. Excuses, word salad. What do you think of what the offensive coordinator for the Texans, who has not scored an offensive touchdown or touchdown period in the last four games, had to say about all of that? Killer Bees broadcasting live from Drift Bar in the Heights. It is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're back with the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Drift Bar in the Heights. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Brandt.
Killer Bees broadcasting live from Drip Bar in the Heights. Gotta get out here. Great beer. The beer is very, very cold. Best patio in the Heights with an emphasis on patio weather. It's your tropical escape in the Heights. Fantastic spot. You're going to love it. You've been there before. How's the scene over there, Blankers?
It's beautiful, Jeremy. It's always great here. The fact that they can just roll up these garage doors and you've got the open air feel of you're inside, but the breeze is coming through. It's a perfect Friday to get out of work, play a little hooky, get here early. We always talk about the fact that, this is for a bar setting, clean, very kind of upscale feel to it. But the drinks are reasonably priced, and the scenery is fantastic, if you know what I mean. It's a fantastic spot.
What do you mean?
I think that there's good people watching here. I think that the deck goes all the way around the entire establishment for the most part. So there's plenty of outdoor seating where you can, check out all the traffic that's going by in the Heights with all the different establishments here. And there's plenty of TVs to watch plenty of sports, too.
Well done. Best patio in the Heights, too. So you can really do that very nicely, especially with the patio weather that is there. You can also book your Christmas parties, company parties, your perfect spot to do it at Drip Bar. All right, Bobby Slowik talked to the media today. He talked to all of the media that were waiting. They were like sharks in the water waiting for Bobby Slowik to walk through that door. They smelled blood with Bobby Slowik. Bobby Slowik asked about his second half struggle. Sarge asked him, and here's Bobby Slowik going into a very long-winded answer.
Yeah, I mean, I would say really generally, I think we all know in the second half, for probably the last 5 weeks or so, we've struggled. And it's one of those things when you look at, I think we haven't scored a touchdown like 19 straight second half possessions. And honestly, like our approach is football is football. And what I mean when I say that is when we dissect it, because we've known about it for 3, 4, or 5 weeks now. When you really dive in and you're like, okay, what's going on? Is something off with the play calls? Are they doing something different? Are we doing something different? What's happening? It's football. Like, it's the exact same as it was in the first half. We're not operating and executing the same. And that's kind of been something that we've been going back and forth on as an offense really for a couple of weeks now. And ultimately, I think it's one of those things where you keep doing the same thing and you're operating the same way, things aren't working out in your favor. And then even though there may not be necessarily a mental roadblock, it becomes a mental roadblock. And that's kind of what we're working through. And I think we're all in the right space and have the right intent in what we're going to do when we come out in the second half going forward and be on the same page.
Sounded like he borrowed notes from Nick Caserio on how to answer a question there, Blankers.
Yeah, it did, and it gave everybody a whole lot of frustration. I know Paulie was losing his mind and just basically said because of this quote alone that they were going to lose. First it was 49-3, and then it got to 69-2. But he said he did have the right to change it as he gets closer to game time. But, like, football is football, and I know he and Joe were completely repeating that phrase. That is the worst answer I've ever heard in my life. That is so – I mean, there's one thing to say, you're going to use coach speak and word salad like Nick Caserio does. It's another thing to use a quote like that that is so easy to be able to just exploit and use over and over again as a way of pointing the finger going, the hell are you talking about?
Yeah, I mean, it was a very – I usually long answers are ones where they're trying to kind of compensate a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, you get the short, contrite answers. You're not really trying to make a case for yourself or defend yourself. So anytime that you take a question and you give this very, very long-winded answer – I shouldn't say anytime, but most of the time, especially when you're trying to defend some negativity – usually you're just saying a bunch of stuff and then hoping to, like, you know, get the stink off of you, hoping that you can appease the media enough where they can stop hitting you with, like, some hard-hitting questions. So that's kind of what I gathered here, was that it was just this, you know, long-winded defense to him not having a touchdown in the second half of the last four games. The answer in itself, like, what do you really expect him to say? Like, so many people on the Twitter today were like, oh, he needs to just own it. Well, I mean, he kind of is. He's talking about how they haven't been able to score in the last four games. Should he have said something else than football is football? I guess, but is that really that big a deal that he said football is football? Like, no. Like, go score 28 points on Monday night in the second half. That's really going to be the only answer anybody wants.
You're right, but the biggest problem is that, you know, it's okay that he said it, but the way he said it, you just gave food and fodder to all the people that are waiting to pounce on something so that they can exploit it as a negative. I think if he would have just said, look, we're aware of what you guys are aware of. We knew I knew you were going to be asking about this because it's been bothering me. We know that we have an issue in the second half. We know we're not scoring points. We know how many games we haven't scored a touchdown in the second half, et cetera, et cetera. But it's still part of the fact that the game is not just cut and dried at halftime. Everything changes, you know, it spins 180 and you got to adjust. It's adjusting from play to play, series to series as well, and we're on top of that. Then it would have been fine. But because you gave them the headline material and to pounce on, then it's just going to get worse.
Yep. See, I think that he did say all those things that you want him to say.
Uh-huh.
Like, he did say we've struggled here. He did say that we need to get better. He did say that I need to be better. He did say that I'm taking it personal. But you're right. That's kind of like, okay, that's the part of the quote, the long-winded quote that we're just going to pounce on. And then we're just going to use, like, beat that to death. The football is football. And you're right. From, like, a PR perspective, try to give them nothing that you can then turn around to do that. But, again, like, nothing that he says is going to change the feelings towards him. The only thing that will change the feelings towards him is if they fix their woes.
Yeah, and it's kind of like, you know, you were talking about, and we were saying even how CJ handled his question and answer session. It's like Andy Pettit versus Roger Clemens with the steroid situation. If you take ownership in it, and if he just comes out and says, look, it's on me. I know that we've got to be better. I see the numbers. I know that, you know, we've got to be able to score points in the second half. People will probably more than likely start to lay off a little bit, but when you give them that kind of comment, they're looking to pounce.
Yeah, and here's another one from Bobby Slowick, Landry Locker, asking him about shaking things up.
Like, you said you haven't changed. Do you think maybe y'all should change what you've been doing offensively?
Yeah, I mean, I say we haven't changed big picture. There's been changes. Okay. I can assure you of that. But there's been always. You're always making subtle adjustments. I mean, you're talking through the week. You're talking in game. You're talking what we do at halftime. Like, I mean, we've talked about a lot of different things.
That's the media out to get you. Because, of course, they're changing. They're coordinators. They change week to week.
Well, but then it starts to, you know, behoove you to ask the question, like, what changes are we missing that you made? Because it really wasn't personnel-wise unless you want to talk about what you did on the offensive line. If you want to talk about, like, play calling, it's been pretty consistent to where, I don't want to say it's completely predictable, but most times we can predict what they're going to do based on formation and kind of what they've been doing.
Let's try that. We need to try that. We need to sit there and they come out in an offensive line or an offensive formation and then do the Tony Romo, this is what play is coming.
I mean, we could, because I think in a lot of cases, you know, and one of the traps they fall into is first and second down runs when the run isn't working. Like, it's one thing if Mixon's running wild and then it just makes sense to get him the ball as much as you possibly can. And then when they start to really try to, you know, load up the box, then you can really exploit it in the passing game. But there were times last week where they just put themselves in holes on third down and longer down in distance because of the fact that the run wasn't there and working for them, yet he was hell-bent on running the football.
Yeah, but running, I mean, there's more than one run play.
Sure, I know, but I'm just saying, whether Joe went to the edge or he tried to find the hole, you know, between the tackles, it just seemed like everything was muddled up and congested, yet they were so hell-bent on, we are going to run the football. And this is not, you know, the first time we've heard this from them. They want to be a running team. But when you look at it in that situation, we talked about even the short pass can be a lot more effective when the actual true running game isn't working the way it has.
How many times do you think that they ran it versus passed it, like percentage-wise?
I would say they ran it 42% of the time.
Pretty close. They threw it 33 versus running it 28. But that's throwing it more than running it. Like, the whole, they're only running the football, that's not true. Like, they're throwing the ball more than they're running the ball. Here's my theory on coach talk and press conferences and all of this stuff. Whenever a coach is liked, that coach can literally say whatever they want, like, without, you know, with the exception of, you know, some great grand insult or something that's like racist or anything like that. But for the most part, coaches who are winning and who are adored, they can say whatever. They have free reign to say pretty much whatever. But coaches who are struggling and aren't liked by fans, they can't say anything right. Bobby Slowick could have went up to that press conference today and said everything exactly how you wanted him to say it, could have said it perfectly, would have been no problem, and still people are going to find something to dissect and magnify to make it sound bad. Because when you're a coach that is not liked and when you're a coach that isn't doing things well, they're going to turn everything you say around against you. If you took the number one offensive coordinator in the NFL today and he had the exact same press conference as Bobby Slowick, There is no backlash to what he had to say.
I think there's a lot of truth to that. And I think that, again, that's why, the way we started this when he came after running his quote was the fact that they were looking to pounce. They're looking to, because they know their ammunition to do their job best and get the most, you know, eyeballs on what they're doing is going to be to kind of focus on what everybody is focused on right now, and that is the lack of production by this offense and specifically in the second half. And when you kind of, and again, not everybody's a public speaker either, right? You know, they have to do these press conferences, but not everybody.
But it's the exact same. Even if it's the exact same. Like, if you're not liked, you can't say anything. If you're well-liked, you can say whatever.
Yeah, and there is a way to try and tiptoe around it, but, you know, you're right. No matter what you say, they will find a way to put something together that basically kind of drives their narrative and the narrative of the fan, because that's who they're trying to appease.
I kind of reject, though, the idea that they're running the ball too much. I think this is kind of going back to basically Nico Collins and the effect that he has on the offense, because we saw at some point, especially in the second half, the Lions had no fear of the Texans' receivers. I mean, not even Tank Dell, to the fact that they were basically playing man press up and daring to see if anyone could beat them in one-on-one press coverage, and they really couldn't. And so if that's the situation, I don't know if the answer is to pass it more. Like, I think they do have to run the ball, because without Nico Collins, they don't really have the option of being pass heavy. Now, Nico Collins changes things. With Nico Collins, they're going to see a lot of two high safety looks, because Nico Collins is one of the best deep guys in the league. He's proven that he can beat guys over the deep, deep consistently. We saw it in the last play he's had this year in the big touchdown against the Bills. But without Nico, teams don't have a fear of the Texans beating the deep, so they play up and they press, and I don't know if the option is there to be more pass-heavy without Nico.
I'm not saying they're running it too much. I'm just saying their pattern of when they run has also contributed to their ability to have longer third downs to get to, because sometimes they stay hell-bent to kind of, like I said, a predictability, not necessarily that they're running it too much. Yeah.
Well, I mean, think of the opposite of that, though. Let's say they go with your suggestion. They pass on first down and it's incomplete. I mean, now are you going third and 10 if you don't pick? Are you running the ball?
But it depends on the play you call,
the third down?
Right? Yeah, right. But if it's just that little dump over the defensive line where the back, you know, hits one block and gets behind the defensive line and turns around, that could be just as effective or more effective than a run when you're having a hard time finding holes.
I hear you. It feels like sometimes we get wrapped up too much, I think, in like what the play is. It just really matters more if it's successful. Like, I mean, because if you pass on first down and it's incomplete, now you're in a situation where if you don't run it, you're going, what, three passes? Or you're running it and picking up 2 yards, and now it's third and eight? So it's really not, well, do we run on first down or we run on second down? It's one, being unpredictable, so I will concede that. And two, is it successful? You just got to be successful, which is an oversimplification, but I don't think it matters a whole lot about, you know, run rate on first down versus second down.
Yeah, I agree with Blankers in the sense that, like, I agree that he does things to his tendencies that other teams kind of have a pretty good idea of what the Texans are going to do.
Yeah, you got to be unpredictable. Like, I agree with that.
Obviously, that you're going to be more sophisticated than halfback dive or remember the Titans where you have a six-play playbook. but the tendencies, I think, have been there. I do think the defenses, to Blanker's points, have been picking some of the tendencies of Bobby Slowik, and I think that he's given them away sometimes with his formations, too, to Blanker's point. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Killer Bees broadcasting live from Drift Bar. You're looking for a spot to have a little happy hour drink. Drift Bar is that spot. Jonah Javad, who is the TV sports anchor for WFAA, ABC in Dallas. He'll join us next, talk a little bit of Cowboy Texans Monday Night Football. It is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN
92.5. ESPN 97.5 and 95.5. Broadcasting live from Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Drift Bar in the Heights.
Spot to get your weekend started, your tropical escape in the Heights, Drift Bar. It's Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Let's go out to the HRNP guest line, being joined now by Jonah Javad, TV sports anchor for ABC 8 in Dallas. Thank you so much, Jonah, for hanging out with the Killer Bees, spending some time with us. Can you fill us in on this quarterback situation? Why is Cooper Rush getting starts over Trey Lance?
Because Mike McCarthy is trying his hardest to keep his job. I think that's got to be the only reason, right? Because anyone with a brain knows this Cowboys season is pretty much shot to crap. So what do? If you're a fan, if you just want to see what else you've got on the roster, Trey Lance makes the most sense, right? You traded for this guy a year ago, right, on a whim, hoping that he might be something. Why not give him a shot? Well, Mike McCarthy is in the final year of his contract as head coach, and winning games is probably the only thing that even convinces Jerry Jones that he should keep his job, and Cooper Rush technically gives you the best chance at winning games. Whether they should be in that mode of thinking at this point in the season is a different question.
Jonah, I'm curious, just because of the fact that we've all pretty much come to the conclusion, no matter what McCarthy's trying to do, that he's a dead man walking for the most part. And then how does the franchise move on? Because they've locked up Dak. They've locked up CD. You know, Parsons obviously is coming up. But at the same time, it's the Dallas Cowboys. They don't go full reset mode. They don't do what the Texans did a couple years ago and just completely start from scratch. So from the coach to the roster, how do they move forward out of this being the Dallas Cowboys?
I wish there was an easy answer. I mean, what you're seeing this season and really what kind of lays on the horizon for them is a series of bad decisions in the past that have all mushroomed at the same time and blown up in their face this year. We can go back to the CeeDee Lamb and Dak Prescott contract situations this year. They didn't get them done early, ended up hurting them contract number-wise, and it really top-loaded their roster. I mean, they're really top-heavy with their contracts, and they didn't fill in the gaps in free agency. You know, Jerry Jones has that famous quote from the springtime, we'll be all in. They were not all in, and because of that, they weren't as able to add veterans or good depth to this roster. And when you got, and when what happened was, injuries to their star players. You get injuries to Dak Prescott, injuries to Micah Parsons, Tank Lawrence, and when you don't have the depth and the planning ahead for if those injuries happen, you're left with a roster and really a lineup, a depth chart that is not fit to contend. The front office has made a series of really bad decisions the last few years. They've drafted pretty poorly, which is weird because a few years ago they were drafting great. Now they're drafting poorly. They're not doing enough in free agency. They're bumbling every single long-term contract extension. It's costing them money and cap space in the long run. And so, really, and I've talked about this on air here at WFAA in Dallas and also social media as well, is this is a Jerry Jones problem. If he can't get out of his own way, if he can't hire somebody football operations-wise to right this ship, it's just going to keep happening over and over. What's the old phrase? Definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result.
Different result, yeah.
That's the Dallas Cowboys for the last, what, 30 years?
Jonah Javad joining us on the HRNP guest line, Emmy Award-winning TV sports anchor at WFAA ABC 8 in Dallas. I feel like I know the answer to this, and Jerry's not going to fire Jerry. I feel pretty confident saying that. What is the approval rating of Jerry Jones, though, right now in Dallas?
It's as low as it's been since I've been in the market. I've been here, what, seven-ish years. And granted, for you know a number of those years, they had strong winning records. They win postseason most of those years, feeling pretty good, and then they you know inevitably flamed out pretty quick. And fans were buying the, oh, we'll get them next year just because they had a talented roster. They were really good during the regular season. I think this year it's been the lowest I've seen because fans aren't stupid. Fans know that the Cowboys didn't do enough in free agency. Fans knew that they weren't handling the contract situations the way smart front offices do. And they knew that this was destined to blow up in their face. And when it did, fans were annoyed because if they can see this coming, why couldn't Jerry and the rest of the front office? You know, if they're the ones who are making the money, paying the bills, whatever, he owns the team. He's got, you know, the power to do whatever he wants. But if, you know, your average Joe down the road knows what the Cowboys are screwing up and the front office can't do anything about it, how is that supposed to inspire any sort of hope or faith in the team? So, yeah, it's tough times in Cowboys Nation these days.
And then, Jonah, what's the vibe on Dak? I mean, you lock him up. He gets another mega contract. He was awful in the playoffs last year against Green Bay and caught even more scrutiny than he had caught before about being the kind of athlete that we know from Houston where it's all fun and games and great when you play great in the regular season. If you don't play well in the playoffs, you're going to catch it. And now he's hurt, and that doesn't help him anymore. He's got this big number and this big contract. There's rumors about Deion Sanders and trying to get Shadur, which just seems to be completely illogical. But how do you move on with Dak? And is there any hope that Dak's a guy that's eventually going to figure it out to be the guy he's always supposed to be?
Yeah, I mean, Dak Prescott last year was the runner-up for the MVP award. I mean, he's, what, 9 months removed from playing some of the best football of his entire life? And so where you're like, how does he go from that to, you know, what we saw this year? I think it's kind of some of the stuff I mentioned, right? Like, they just didn't add talented pieces. And you throw in the fact that, you know, we watch the Cowboys every week, and then we watch all these other teams, you know, like the Kyle Shanahans and the Sean McVays, offenses that are good at scheming their playmakers open and not just relying on the same set of routes. I mean, the Cowboys are allergic to pre-snap motion. They're just, McCarthy's offense is not really modernized in a way that benefits who the Cowboys have. So either they've got to change their scheme or they've got to bring in more playmakers because just CeeDee Lamb is not going to cut it. They didn't do enough at running back. And so when you add all these parts together, you're really asking Dak Prescott every week to be Superman. And I think Dak Prescott is a good quarterback when he's got solid pieces around him. Is he going to be the guy that elevates a pretty mid roster to a Super Bowl? I don't think he's that. And by now, I think everybody pretty much knows that. But he's definitely good enough to win a Super Bowl as long as they've got other solid parts around him. In the front office did him no favors. The coaching and the scheme, the offensive system, does him no favors. And so I think there's got to be some optimism. He's a very polarizing player. For Cowboys fans, it's bizarre. I mean, people either love him or hate him. And he's been mostly great for them in his time in Dallas. But I think fans are just frustrated and looking for a scapegoat. And, you know, the guy who throws the football and throws interceptions is an easy target. But, you know, when your guys aren't getting open and you're down by 20, you're kind of forced to do things that you don't want to do. So I think Dak's put in a precarious spot. His future with the team is still under contract. Just signed that mega deal in the fall, so he'll be here for the foreseeable future, but the front office has to help him out because he can't do it alone.
Yeah, I think you nailed that take with Dak. Jonah, we appreciate it. Good stuff. Hope to catch up again down the road.
Thanks, fellas. It'd be good.
Jonah Javad, TV sports anchor for WFAA, ABC 8 in Dallas, Emmy Award-winning TV sports anchor as well. All right, Coach Speak. Is this Coach Speak from DeMeco Ryan? 713-780-ESPN. It is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Our foundation is built on love.
I admire each of you. Thank you. I love you.
And trust.
I think it just shows our culture.
Hard work.
Now we're going to prove something. We're going to play with that chip on our shoulder.
Giga Maggie.
Hit the rim. Count it and one, Manny, in traffic.
The Aggies play here on the Texas A&M Sports Network.
Game coverage of Texas A&M versus Ohio State begins tonight at 7:30 on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Maestro Dobel. If you enjoy tequila, this is the name to know. I'm drinking the Añejo right now, and this is what I love about Maestro Dobel. It's the variety of excellent tequilas they've created, all with different flavor profiles. The Silver, Reposado, the Añejo, Diamante, and Humido all show off Maestro Dobel's mastery of the art of tequila making, so you get a variety of complex aromas, flavors, and finishes. You're going to truly love making your cocktails with Maestro Dobel. Find Maestro Dobel anywhere liquor is sold. Maestro Dobel.
See website for details. Millsap is not a lender and does not make credit decisions. Must be 18 years old. Not available in all states.
Honey, the credit card bill came and we're maxed out.
Great. Maxed out cards, rent is due, bills are piling up. We just need some extra cash to help us get by for a few weeks.
We should do what my brother did. He went to BillsHappen.com and got $3,000 the next day.
With our bad credit, I don't think so.
BillsHappen.com is different. They are one of the largest personal loan networks. They can help people with all credit types get up to $5,000.
I'm sure there's a lot of paperwork.
Nope, my brother said it was easy. He did it right from his phone.
If you have a regular source of income, you can be approved for a loan for up to $5,000 in minutes, and your cash can hit your bank account the next day. BillsHappen.com's lenders have millions of dollars to lend, regardless of your credit history.
Great news. I went to BillsHappen.com, and we will have our money as soon as tomorrow.
Wow, that is fast.
If you need extra cash, go to BillsHappen.com. That's BillsHappen.com. BillsHappen.com.
Listen up, Texas. You can now play Powerball, Mega Millions, and your favorite Scratchers right on your phone. That's right. You can now buy and play the Scratcher games you love, like 500X and Jackpot Millions, right on your phone with Jackpot.com. The top Scratch ticket prize is up to $20 million, so don't wait. Play Scratchers right on your phone with Jackpot.com.
I just won $5,000 with Mobile Scratchers. It's your chance to win real cash prizes.
I love playing Scratchers, and Jackpot.com makes it so easy because you can buy your Scratchers and play them right on your phone.
Jackpot.com is the greatest thing ever. I can buy Scratchers like 500X and Jackpot Millions and play them right on my phone. I never have to leave my couch.
Don't wait. The top Scratch ticket prize is up to $20 million. Go to Jackpot.com and buy and play scratch-off tickets on your phone. Go to Jackpot.com. That's Jackpot.com. Jackpot.com.
Paid for by Jackpot.com. You must be 18 or older to order a lottery ticket. Please play responsibly. If you or somebody knows a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
The John Clay Wolf Show. Here's what's going on in the Wolf Pack.
Fuel prices are coming down.
No.
Have you not noticed?
CBS News 20 hours ago, after drifting downward for the past few weeks, gas prices are on the rise again.
2 weeks of dropping. I'm right for 2 weeks. You're right for 15 minutes. And you're going to trump me on national radio.
I'm sorry.
The John Clay Wolf Show, every Saturday morning.
ESPN 97.5.
Follow ESPN Houston on social media at ESPN 97.5.
The Killer Bees are broadcasting live from inside the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Drift Bar in the Heights. Now back to Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
H pumping back with some bangers. He's filling in for BMAC as BMAC engineers on site at the Drift Bar in the Heights. Perfect spot for you to get a little drink on for happy hour. It's your perfect spot to watch John Jones and UFC 309 tomorrow. Heavyweight championship of the world. Watch it at Drift Bar. A great college football spot. Great college basketball spot as well. Christmas parties, company parties. Have it at Drift Bar. It's where the Southern Coast meets a true Texas ice house. All right, DeMeco Ryans, Coach Speak, not Coach Speak. Always like to play the game because you know the coaches are going to do the whole, yeah, everybody's great. Dallas Cowboys have a wonderful football team. Cooper Rush is fantastic. So always like to do how much of this is Coach Speak, how much of this is real. Here's the first one with DeMeco Ryans talking about Micah Parsons.
Exceptional player. Right? He plays with a relentless motor. He moves all over the place. He, you know, aligns on the edge and the A-gap. He's all over the place, and he's all over the field. He's an impact player for them. So we have to have, you know, high awareness for where he is at all times and, you know, try to do a great job of stopping him.
Yeah, that's just – not at all. He's just speaking facts. I mean, anybody that watches football at all knows that he's not wrong and that he is a very disruptive force. And, you know, I think he's one of those rare exceptions where you can try and speak coach speak to push a player up and pump him up a little bit, but it's pretty accurate with Parsons.
Yeah, this is zero coach speak. Everything he said about Micah Parsons is the truth. Micah Parsons is a very good player. In fact, it's one of my favorite things to watch in this game. Like, they move Micah Parsons around, so it's not like this one specific matchup. But Micah Parsons versus the Houston Texans pass protection. I mean, you talk about mismatches, right? Like, you're going to have a fight tonight. Mike Tyson, Jake Paul, John Jones fight Stipe tomorrow. Like, this is going to be a mismatch. If Micah Parsons and the Texans pass protection had odds in Vegas, it'd be Micah Parsons minus 300. So that's something that's going to be fascinating to watch come Monday night, which is kind of weird they're playing Monday night because usually we do storylines and stuff today. We can do it on Monday. Here's another one from D'Amico. He was asked – this one's funny, actually. He was asked about the rivalry with the Cowboys.
Nothing special for us. You know, we're hungry and excited about, you know, getting a win. I know it's, you know, it's exciting and it means a lot to our fans. But for us, it means a lot because it's the next one.
There you go. No fun, sir. Coach Speak?
No, I think it was more honesty than you know, maybe even the fans would like to hear, but it's the truth. I mean, there's just not, you don't play them enough. You're in different conferences. Sure. I mean, if both these teams were playing at the top of their game, we remembered that when the Cowboys came here, that there were the parking lot fights and it changed the way you're allowed to tailgate for the rest of the time you go to NRG and you know, the games themselves and winning the first ever game in Texans history came against the Cowboys on Monday Night Football. But he's not wrong. It's just an honest answer that there's not much of a rivalry there because you just don't play them enough.
Yeah, I second what Joel said. You play them once every 4 years. Now, obviously, this is the exception. This is not a part of the divisional rotation. But when you play a team once every 4 years, even if it's in-state, I don't think it really means anything for the players in that locker room or the coaches and the coaching staff. Now, is it a rivalry for the fans? Yeah, we hate Dallas. We hate the Mavericks. We hate the Rangers. We hate everything Dallas. We hate everything Arlington. But for the guys in the locker room, guys who, I mean, in the time that they've, a lot of the guys on this roster might not even been on the team the last time they played Dallas. And having it been, what, like 2 years ago when they last played Dallas? So, I don't think it means anything to the guys on the 53.
The Texans are struggling right now. Like, they've lost three or four games. So it's kind of like you're not catching this game at the right time for it to be this big rivalry matchup. Because we know that coaches like to look for things to fuel their team, to get them through the week, the monotony of an NFL season. And if the Texans were kind of rolling right now, we're 3-4, like three or four games up in the division, there weren't a whole lot at stake, Cooper Rush is the quarterback, not Dak Prescott, Cowboys aren't playing well, I think it'd be very easy to be like, oh yeah, this is a rivalry. We really got to get this one to kind of fire up the troops. But like, that's not the calling card this week. The calling card is get right.
Yeah, that's the thing, Jeremy, is the fact that, you know, the Packer-Bears rivalry is renewed again this weekend, and the rookies go out to dinner with veterans in Green Bay if they aren't familiar with it, because there's so much history and hatred. And it much like CJ and Micah in the offseason, it got ramped up because guys were talking smack from both sides. And now the teams are in a position where it's, you know, the tradition is there to where it still matters. But from your point, if these two teams are playing the best football and they're playing with a chance to actually do something, all that back and forth between Micah and CJ is going to be front page news this week. They're going to be pushing that narrative. They're going to be pushing, oh man, what if Micah gets home a few times and CJ's got to back up what he said. And then you're going to really start getting into that whole fan hatred as well. But it's just like someone, you know, let the air out of the sails of this game from what we thought it was going to be at the start of the season.
9117 says it's only a rivalry to Texans fans. That's probably a Cowboy fan saying that the Texans are not a Cowboy rival, which is probably true. Like, the Cowboys division rivals are way higher than the Texans.
Cowboys, Eagles, Cowboys, Giants.
Here's another.
Even Washington now, because aside from Brian, no one thought that Washington was going to do what they're doing. But overall, all three of those are rivals.
Here's another one. D'Amico Ryan's on Cooper Rush.
And Cooper has been there a while, and he understands how to operate the offense very efficiently. Like, when it comes to everything, every operation that goes with the offense, the checks, all right, getting them in the proper plays. Like, Cooper does a great job of managing all of the pre-snap operations, and he does a great job of getting the ball out, you know, finding his playmakers, making really good decisions with the football. So we still have to be on all of our details, right? Cooper has a great record from when he started. He's won a lot of games, so we have to – we're going in with the mindset of if it being about the Texans and about us executing the right way.
Coach speak. There's a lot of coach speak in that. That's the one where you're trying to put lipstick on a pig in a lot of ways, mm-hmm. because of how bad their offense is, has been, and will be, and no matter what Cooper Rush can do, he has to coach speak it so he doesn't give them bulletin board material. But you got to believe that they're planning to see Trey Lance at some point in this game too.
That was 100% coach speak. I mean, that was a very long-witted answer from D'Amico, where he never mentioned one thing, and rightfully, about the talent of Cooper Rush. It was, oh, well, he knows the playbook. He can execute getting them in and out of plays. He's been there for a while. It was all about, well, he's been there for a while. He's a veteran, and technically he knows the offense, but nothing was about the talent of Cooper Rush. He was trying to, in that long-winded clip, like, okay, what can I say without saying he sucks? And so he just talked about all the game manager things. That was 100% coach speak.
What kind of managers?
Game manager.
Oh, okay. Game manager. CJ Stroud's not really a game manager, by the way. He is a game changer. It's what he said, yesterday.
Right.
No, this is 100% coach speak. This is D'Amico Ryan's trying to be as nice as possible. But, he's got to. He can't be like, well, Cooper Rush is a bum, guys. We expect to dominate him. And if he actually did do that, you could go back to last year in which he lost to a couple of bums. Handed Bryce Young his first ever NFL win. Does Desmond Ridder come to mind? How about losing to Zach Wilson in the New York Jets? So, in the back of my mind, I kind of remember that D'Amico Ryan's lost to a couple of quarterback bums a year ago. Quarter bums, QBs. So that is alive and well, at least in my mind.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I think that, you know, the point I'm trying to make, too, is the fact that the one you brought up when questioning the guys in Dallas is, why aren't you playing Trey Lance? Why isn't he starting? If he's not starting, there has to be some kind of an idea in their minds that they've got to see what he is, how he may have advanced since he left San Francisco, to see if there's any reason to consider him, you know, as the backup for Dak next year or a trade piece or whatever. And if you're the Texans, you go, yeah, well, we've got the more advanced we played against the more advanced version, if you want to call it that, of Trey Lance with Anthony Richardson. Let's see what he's got. We know how to defend that, too, because we want to make Trey Lance throw the football.
Yeah, it is interesting, the whole Lance-Cooper Rush thing, because I know McCarthy's trying to keep his job, but Jerry Jones is the boss. And if I'm the guy that traded for Trey Lance, I want to see what Trey Lance looks like. And they're both under contract for this year, and that's it. Like, Cooper Rush isn't a guy that's under contract going forward. He's in the final year of his deal. Trey Lance is in the final year of his deal. So it's weird to me. And I agree with you. I think that you probably do see both of them. What is your plan B for the Astros if they miss out on Bregman? Dana Brown says there is no plan B, but what is it, really? What would it be for you? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees broadcasting live from Drift Bar in the Heights on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
All right, before we go to the break, got a quick minute here for Underdog Fantasy, and what a weekend for sports we have coming up. So much going on, and with all the action on the field, you've got tons of chances to make money with Underdog Fantasy this weekend. So what are you going to watch? Whatever it is, Underdog Fantasy has your game, so let's make some money with their pick'em games. The simplest and most fun way to play DFS, where all you have to do is choose higher or lower on player stats like points, rebounds, or assists in the NBA. It really is that simple to make money with Underdog Fantasy. So, you're going to watch Tyson versus Paul tonight? I know Jeremy won't, but what do you think? Mike Tyson lands higher or lower than 50.5 punches on Jake Paul? Will either Tyson or Paul score a knockdown? You could play either of those and pick a game tonight, or maybe you're going to watch the Rockets in a cup game. You think Shingun gets higher or lower than 18.5 points? How about higher or lower than 20.5 points for Jalen Green? If you've got a strong feeling either way on any of those, or any other action, college basketball, college football, the NHL. If you've got a strong feeling either way, don't wait. Get your pick 'em entry in now and get that bag. And don't forget, while playing Underdog Fantasy, that playing streaks is also a great way to have fun and make some money, where if you get 11 picks right in a row, you'll win up to 1,000 times your money. My current streak now is up to 6 correct picks after I hit on higher than half a rushing touchdown for Jalen Hurts last night, and I'm jumping back in tonight with a lower than 28.5 points for Devin Booker at OKC in their tough defense. So don't forget, while playing streaks, playing pick 'em, you can cash out a winning entry early. All you have to do is just tap the win now button. So if you decide you don't want any more risk, that option's up to you. You can cash out whatever you want if your entry is still winning. With that type of flexibility, why would you play anywhere else other with an underdog fantasy? So go ahead, download the app now, sign up with promo code BMAC, that's B-M-A-C, and deposit to get up to $1,000 in bonus cash instantly. That's promo code BMAC, B-M-A-C. Must be
ESPN 97.5. Please stand by.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.